Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And tonight we're going to be talking about, well, how we can recognize what a soul is in ourselves and others, and what that really means. And before I get into that, I want to mention that last week, some of you may have tuned in and said, well, where is everybody? And everybody was evacuated, apparently, from the part of California where our station is located. And for last week's show, unfortunately, they couldn't be there. Now, the next day, they got back on the air, and everything is fine, of course, and so here we are. But some of you may have not known that. I don't know. If you didn't know it, well, that was the reason why. And so we're back here and doing fine. Okay, now let me tell you a little bit about what I mean when I'm talking about a soul so that you can understand. Oh, by the way, this is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. I didn't say that at the very beginning, in case you don't know it. And if you're new to the show, well, welcome. And if you'd like to call in, by the way, you can do so at 877-876-5227. If you're in the U.S., those of you in Canada can reach us at 888-815-9756. Call anytime while we're on here. Now, let me tell you what I mean when I'm talking about, in general, a soul. Because this is a show that deals with metaphysics and spirituality, also physics in general, and other parts of science. So it's kind of like joining together, you might say, the parts of science and the parts that are way beyond science. And it's definitely about things that I would consider to be spiritual, which means expressing some concept or thought about the creator of our universe and the things that we think about and do. Okay, so what is a soul then? What is it that I mean by a soul? A soul is the part of all living things that has the element of spirit within itself and can recognize that element and can respond to that element in a way that helps life to grow itself and to become a meaningful part not only of to itself, but also to the creator that ultimately had some instrument in its own creation and some help in doing so to the soul itself and to all other parts of life. So if we look at this from my definition, then souls are really kind of like the intermediaries between the creator or God of our universe and life itself. And without souls, life would have a very difficult time because souls provide life with the ability to be in touch with this greater side. Now, in souls that are souls of things less than human, the information that transfers from these souls to the life that they inform comes through in a preconceived thought method, sometimes referred to as instincts. And in these life forms, even the life forms that are right below us, you know, like primates, which are, you know, the highest form of mammals, You can say that in this kind of life, in these kinds of life forms, is necessary, unfortunately, for the soul to be much more conscious and cognizant of the thought of the creator than the individual life form is capable of doing. Because the life form has not yet developed enough sense of its own creator to be able to achieve the results on its own. So the soul kind of steps in and does it for it. And it provides a lot of instinctual type of thinking. It works pretty good, but it's very averaged. And it doesn't give individuality, much individuality, to the life forms, no matter how advanced they are. The exception is when those life forms have contact with us, because we have the capability of direct awareness of our own creator. It's the reason why human beings generally have a search for their creator, and they do so through institutions and in many different ways that helps them to remain in touch with or try to establish to be in touch with this greater being. Not everybody has that. Some people reject it, by the way, and say, oh, no, I'm not into that. But the majority of us actually do. And this is the interesting part about this, is that we have a sense, two of them, that gives us a sense of awareness, from senses comes awareness, of our own creator. That's missing in almost all animals except those that have a lot of contact with us. And they start getting a little tiny piece of this, and they actually are helped by being around us. That's a very good thing, by the way. It doesn't mean that they have a full concept about it, a full understanding. They gain a little bit of it, and it's worthwhile. All right. Now that we understand that part, then what are human souls? What are they doing that's different from the souls of all other life forms, lower than human? And the interesting answer to this is that human souls are just more conscious, not more aware of God. It's very important to be understanding of this. Everybody thinks that the soul, the human soul, has got it all because it's got to be this great being, right, who, because of its greatness or whatever, has advanced way beyond the human counterpart that somehow we're connected to and with. Well, I'm going to explain in this show today something that may shock some people. Humans themselves actually have the potential for a greater awareness of their creator than the soul in abstentia, in existence in a place called the higher monastic or mental world. It's a much more, we'll say, involved and developed dimensional part of our universe than where we are right now. In that world, the soul actually has less sense, less direct sense of its own creator. And the reason for it is that it doesn't have as many bodies and senses. Awareness comes from senses, as humans do. That's the reason we're necessary. We provide an important ingredient in the process. Now, the human soul does have something we don't have. Because it has less awareness that can obstruct its consciousness, it has a better balance, almost a perfect balance, between its consciousness and the awareness it does have through its monastic body. Now, the critical element here is this balance, because the balance allows our souls to remain continuously in a, we'll say, a state of full consciousness or near full consciousness mentally of its own creator. Whereas we lose this mental consciousness because we have the added bodies and senses that provide us with a lot of added information, which is good, it seems, that unfortunately we misinterpret. The information is scrambled and screwed up and ignored by our personalities, and in the process we break the conscious connection to our own creator and to our soul some of the time, because we have these added bodies and senses, which interestingly provides us with the capability, but not necessarily the actuality, of us being even more aware of our own creator than our soul in abstentia in the mental world is. I hope I'm not confusing you with all this. I know it sounds a little bit, you know, like, oh, wow, what is he saying? Well, I'm trying to go as slow as possible, but I do want to explain this because a lot of people, they don't understand it. They don't know what I'm saying, and they aren't able to put it all together. And it's really important because for us here, it makes our lives extremely meaningful and exceptionally important, because we actually are the opportunity for growth for our souls. We provide the opportunity for our souls to grow beyond their present capabilities, because where they are right now, they are limited by not having enough bodies and senses, in the lower dimensions of time and space that human beings predominantly exist within. And that without that added information, they are really missing a great deal about what their own creator, God, is really like. We can provide this, provided we can unscramble our own information and be more open to it and connect that. We are the connectors to our soul. We are the connectors. Everybody thinks the soul is the connectors. Well, not really. As a matter of fact, if it was up to the soul, it would already be done, because the souls are already balanced in their consciousness and able to maintain a full state or near full state of consciousness with their creator most of the time. We are the opposite. We are the ones that are having the problem, but yet we are the ones that are so critical in this formula for us to be able to contribute to the growth of our soul. Yeah, I know it sounds upside down, and many people think otherwise, but I'm telling you what I think is the truth. And if you disagree with me, call in right now. It's okay. You can say, hey, well, what are you talking about? How could we be the ones, you know? We're goofy, and isn't the soul, you know, great and everything? No, it is great in its own right, because it is more conscious on a consistent basis than we are. It has better understanding of its creator, where it exists from. But it doesn't have greater opportunity to be aware, and we provide that opportunity. So you understand the importance, I hope, now, of who we are and what we contribute. Because this is critical. If you can get this, I think it really makes a person's life, all of our lives, much more important and meaningful. Just to see this. Okay? Now, holding on to that tidbits or those tidbits of information, I'm going to tell you some other ways that we can recognize the soul in us, so that when we are actually working out the confusion in our senses, the confusion in the information, getting wrong information, and getting wrong things misunderstood, as we work it out, and as we follow more the, we'll say, consciousness of our soul, while providing the awareness through ourselves, we are then working together with our soul, and we are becoming more of our soul. But there are certain things that are critical to that process, and I'm going to name some of them now through today's show, so that we can all maybe practice this and work on it together. One of the first things that enters my mind is that souls, by definition, but also because many great minds have come up with this over a long time, far greater than anything I can say for sure, souls have great humility. Now, what is humility? Humility is the concept, we'll say, that we are not perfect, that we can and often do have things incorrect and misunderstood, and that information from others and ideas from others and openness to the thought of others, including our own souls, is a very important element for us to help to co-serve and to grow in ourselves and to find out where we're making mistakes. And that's this big concept of humility is very important, because it allows us to be open-minded and to grow much more rapidly while we don't obstruct others through tenacious, we'll call it egotism or worse, arrogance, and a kind of, we'll say, barrier to the growth of other people's minds besides our own. So it's so important to try to develop humility, and yet souls in themselves are amazingly humble. And as we develop humility from the human side, remember, we have all this greater awareness of lower dimensions of time and space than our soul has, because we live here. While we're developing this, if we can maintain humility, we develop a connection to the consciousness of our soul, and bring our soul and ourselves together, linking our increased awareness with the greater consciousness of our soul. It's sort of like teamwork is going on. And it's an amazing process. In just using the one thing, humility, a person, if they could maintain it, which is difficult to do, because our tendency is to see ourselves as separate, which tends to allow us to then move into the idea that I'm right and everybody else is wrong. Yeah, that kind of thinking leads us away from our soul. So we have to give that up, be willing to we'll say give and love others more rather than trying to be right and others being wrong, or just being right and whether others are wrong or not, just not caring. So it's very important for us to do that, because as we do, we connect with our soul. And it's the simplest and the most direct way to do it. There is nothing better, no one thing that a person can do more than to become humble if they seek to become their soul. Now, in recognizing this in others, the obvious is that people who are humble, have humility, are those that are open-minded, that do not expect or try to be right. Instead, they seek to be giving and helpful and assume that they're wrong when confronted with information which is different from their own, from other people's minds and thoughts and speech and even actions. And so in those situations, when we see someone doing this, we can say, ah, there's someone who is functioning as their soul. So that's a really good way of determining if someone is or is not functioning as their soul. Very important. And you can feel it. You can sense it oftentimes before you can consciously think of it, because many times it happens that people are more humble than we are. And we may not directly recognize their humility until we, in a more subconscious way, sense it. And the way we sense it is by an attraction to their beingness, a liking of their open-mindedness, a desire to be in their presence and to listen and hear what they might have to say. These are all kinds of ways that people react in subconscious elements. In a conscious way, we might say, oh, there is a person with great humility. There is someone who speaks, thinks with open-mindedness, and doesn't try to block my thinking or other people's thinking, tries to help others to think. This is important because then we have a tool. We have a measuring device as well that lets us know where and how other people are functioning either as their soul or not. Now, humility is only one part of the process, although I think it's the most important. There are many others that come into play. Souls, by nature, because they are more conscious, are also more giving, because they're pretty much the same thing. Consciousness is the ability to understand that we are all one. And the ability to understand that we are all part of one great being, we'll call it God, it doesn't really matter what you want to call it, that recognition allows us to want to give. When someone thinks separatively, they are doing the opposite. Because what they're really thinking is that we're not one. I'm someone different, separate from everyone else, and that causes us to want to take and not give. It causes us to not feel like loving, and it causes us not to act in loving ways. So it's important in the next step, after we work on humility, to attempt to try and develop more givingness, because that's consciousness in itself. To see that we are part of a greater whole, still individual. I'm not saying we're not. Souls, by the way, are individuals as well. But they are individuals who recognize they also are part of a greater oneness and share that oneness, while they also develop their individuality. You can have both. They are not mutually exclusive, as some people sometimes, in a confusion, believe. Okay. So working on this givingness process involves many different aspects. One of them is to study and to think about, to gain an understanding through the others' understandings that have come before us. This is a part of the process of developing consciousness. Another part of that process is to reflect and to meditate and to look inside ourselves, to check out who we really are, and to challenge our own beliefs and thoughts with those thoughts and beliefs of other people. so that we no longer are enveloped in separativeness. We are recognizing that others' thoughts have a critical element in the development of our future ones. And finally, it involves our behaviors. If we do not behave, even if we study and do all the meditation in the world, but if we do not behave in ways that these ways being increasingly giving and giving to others, not just to make them happy or feel good, but rather to help enable them to function more givingly themselves. That's the critical element. If we can do that and get ourselves to do that in increasing ways every day, then we are becoming more our soul and helping others to do the same, because that's what souls do. We're also getting rid of the separativeness. We're moving more towards the oneness in thinking that our souls have. Again, not saying that souls see themselves as being only part of a group. No, they see themselves as great individuals becoming more and more creative. Wow, they support the group of all life and of God, and God's growth being life. That is so critical. So this is part of our process of recognizing and also becoming more our soul. If we can see that others are doing this, and if we join in with them, we then collectively, as a group, can be more functional and more creative. Souls tend to do that. That's another part of the behavior model that has to come with the education and the meditation and the reflection, etc. We've got to put it all together to make it work for us. And when we do, we will have success more than failure, because these are methods that have been done for timeless periods, going back even before this planet existed. This has been used throughout the universe, so it's very powerful for us to be able to take on something that has been used for so long and has been generally successful. It's not always successful, because our personalities tend to get in the way. Our personalities tend to be separate because they do not have most of the consciousness that our soul does have. They have all this awareness, but they confuse the awareness and they believe that they are separate and here only to function independently and separatively from everything else. This is necessary, unfortunately, for humans to have. Because in particularly the earlier parts of our life, if we don't have this, we may not survive. It's a very strange thing. What we need to have in the beginning of our life becomes such a torturous and separative and problem-making situation as we become spiritual adults, which is around 28 years of age, by the way, on an average, give or take. And so as this happens, it's critical for us to change and move away from these personal interests more and more into the interests of being a soul and functioning as one. Really interesting, isn't it? I find that so fascinating, actually. All right, so we have these options, you might say. There are many more. When we come back from break, I will go into them because I find them to be extremely helpful and fascinating. And to recap so far, generally speaking, we are the model, we are the method to help grow our souls in the three lower worlds of time and space that our souls cannot function in without having bodies and senses just like we are. And the soul, in a sense, is incarnate within us, but most of it is missing because it is balanced in its awareness and its thought, in its consciousness, within its own realm, and we are not. So we are kind of like adrift. But hopefully this show and other things, other ways that we can get closer to our soul, will help us to move closer to being the soul here, which is entirely possible. So when we come back, I'll tell you more ways that we can recognize and we can become our souls and how we can help others to do the same. And we should be back in about 2.5 minutes, give or take. And hopefully you all still be out there.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. MacFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for a better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
Well, we're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And today's show, we're talking about how we can recognize and actually become more of our soul and recognize more of souls in others. And I think it's a really interesting subject. Of course, we have to understand what a soul is, which I've covered, I hope, in the first part. And if you would like to call in, you can, 877-876-5227 in the U.S., and so I think it's important now to move on to some other elements of how we can best become our soul. I think the biggest parts. The big parts are like being humble and being more giving, which helps us to become more conscious. But there are other factors that also come into play. The nuances, you might say, of developing oneself into a more spiritual person. And some of these are a little harder to explain, but I think that they also can give us a more fully developed perspective on the subject. First of all, I think it's critical to realize that being a human being is really one of the hardest things in the universe to be. The reason it's so difficult is because human beings are really kind of, and it's used maybe a little bit in some religions, to mean something different, but we're kind of like on a cross. We're kind of like in a position where we're attempting to become something much greater while we're mired in the muck of misinformation, misunderstanding of who we are while we're physically and even astrally and lower mentally alive. Now, we live in these lower dimensions of time and space, separated from our souls, because we're attempting to help our soul to become greater in awareness of its own creator. And without bodies and senses in these lower realms, and without living through those bodies and senses in the lower realms, helping to create more of its creator, the soul is really adrift itself. Now, we're adrift because we don't know who we are. And the soul is adrift because it knows who it is, but it can't function in the lower realms without helping to create us as its emissary and to continue the process. A lot of people say, well, does that mean we're separate from our souls? Are we really part of our souls? And I get confused with this, so let me try to explain that, the nuances, okay? Each step of the way that we start off from, we're further from our soul. So when we begin the process at the very beginning of our first level of incarnation, we are at the lowest development. We have a furthest dimensional problem because we're born in a physical realm in which we're three dimensions or so, or some people say two and a half, away from our soul. It's very difficult for us to grasp who we are, what we're doing, and for us to be in contact with this being that exists two and a half to three dimensions away from us, a very far away. And those dimensions are more complex dimensions, where for us to understand our soul, it's very, very difficult. It's not as difficult as it is to understand our own creator or God itself, but it's still very difficult. And for us to see souls here or where the soul is, it doesn't matter, is equally difficult because we are filled with constant, we'll call it very dense energies going through our physical systems, our etheric physical bodies, that confuse us. The information that comes through gives us a belief. If we only hear and recognize that information without some of the other dimensional aspects, such as the astral and the lower mental, coming through, we actually find ourselves convinced that we are completely separate from everyone and everything else, and we're just living this crazy life, and at some point we're going to die, and who in the heck knows what happens after that. We can believe what some religions tell us, or you can believe maybe what I say or whatever, but belief really doesn't help. That's why I don't want people believing me, because it's of no value. Because unless we can sense this other part of existence, our soul, we can't really realize that we are as immortal as a soul is. Because we are the soul. We're just separated through time and space, but we're not separated from consciousness unless we choose to be. Now, this is a difficult part to understand. The parts of us that live through our existence in the lower worlds, including the physical, that continue to believe that we are separated from our souls, will die. Okay? You got that. That part of our consciousness will cease to exist. The only part of our consciousness that will live forever is the part of our consciousness that understands that we will live forever. And you might say, well, that sounds very circular. I don't like that thought process. I'm sorry. I know when I say it, it does sound that way. But it just takes these nuances to get to the point where it may make some sense. Let me put it like this. That which is like our Creator is immortal and lives forever. And that which is unlike our Creator eventually ceases to exist. So if we go on the assumption or belief structure that we are completely separate from all others, we cease to therefore give most of the time to others, because there's a connection between the two, as I explained in the last segment. And if we don't recognize souls, we don't recognize God, we don't recognize either in ourselves or others, the results are that part of us will cease to exist at some point. Now, the odd part about it is we get more than one crack at this. I call it grace, but you can call it whatever you want. And that is, even though we may really flub it up here, because this is the hardest place to be, the physical world, we may flub it up here. When we do die from here, we go on to live in the astral world, and at least briefly, we live in the etheric part of this world. And so we suddenly discover that we're not dead. Well, you know what? That's a great wake-up call. And for a lot of people, it helps them to start living more spiritually. Now, unfortunately, they're also losing the opportunity, while they were physically alive, to make more of that life by connecting more with their souls while they were physically alive. You can see the loss that can happen. That's why I'm here talking to you right now. I'm hoping that maybe some of all of those who are listening to me will, and maybe all of you will, but hopefully some, will recognize more that while we're here in the physical world, it's so critical for us to understand the things I'm talking about and to recognize that we are souls and that we, and others are, other people are souls, and that we can work together because we have this great opportunity that is so short-lived, actually. It's a lot less time than happens in the astral or lower mental worlds because time becomes dilated, which is a physics thing change. But the most important thing is that we have very little time here, and yet it's very critical because this is the most difficult place in the universe to create our creator. It's the basement. And in the basement, there's very little to build on. We have to put the foundation in and get everything going right here. And it takes the longest to happen. This is also where evil tends to grow so wildly. And it tends to be very destructive. Now, this evil is just this, we'll call it, this affectation of humanity in which we decide on our own that there is no such thing as a God, and we reject life as being God's growth, and instead we tend to abuse it, use it, destroy it for our own purposes. And that's a very bad thing. But at any rate, so here we are to do these great things, and in order to do them, we just need to kind of, we'll say, get over our desire to be separative and our fears of doing so, and to realize that every time we overcome this fear, we also overcome the fear of death, and we are becoming more immortal at the same time. That is one of the gifts we get in the process. Every time we create more virtue, more goodness in the world, we are creating for ourselves, regardless of any other result, a sense of immortality. We feel the relief of fear of death. If you are greatly afraid of death, it's a sign that you're living separatively and you're not recognizing the soul in yourself and in others. I'm giving you one of those little jewels, the clues of how to find out if you're living as a soul or for someone, or if others are. If others are also exhibiting similar fears, and fear of death can be converted into all kinds of other fears. So anyone who's excessively fearful, and especially if they're fearful of death, that is a sign that they are adrift and not connecting with their soul. And those who are unafraid of death, truly, I'm not talking about they just give a lip service. I'm talking about those who really, you can sense it. It's just obvious. This person is just not afraid of dying. And they seem almost fearless about everything in their life. They have a, just some people are like that. They just really have a fearless thing about them. Those people, I'm not talking about people who are risk takers, because risk takers sometimes are trying to avoid greater fears. I talk about people who are truly unafraid. There is a difference, and you can notice this if you look carefully. Those people are also more recognizable as being their souls, and you can get a sense that they are just from that. And you'll find that it happens in yourself as well. So hopefully this nuanced thing that I'm trying to build here, because it's a little more complicated than the first parts of the show, makes some sense to you now. And you can say, whoa. This could be really helpful because I would like to be less afraid of everything. I would like to be less afraid of death. And I would like to maybe have no fear of death. Well, how do I get there? And the way you get there is by creating more light, more of God's thought within yourself and others. Light is just another word for saying spiritual thought. Honestly, they're the same thing. And so if we think more spiritually, if we act more spiritually, remember, we got to have that behavior thing because we're an action universe. The whole universe is about activities. And so we've got to put it into action or else it won't work for us. Then the process will lead to us becoming fearless in our life and fearless about death. And we will know who we really are because we will continually increase our contact in consciousness with the soul that is in the higher monastic world that knows, without question, it is immortal. It doesn't have the conflicts we have. And we will relieve ourselves of tremendous problems and pressures. We will find it, life to be much more meaningful, because much of life is wasted in people trying to overcome fears and to get away from, especially the fear of death. Tremendous amount. I mean, a lot of people say, well, I don't know about that. I don't think about it very often. Yeah, you don't think about it very often because you're trying to sublimate it through gaining power, prestige, material things, on and on. Those are the activities of a person who is trying to run away from the fears they already have. Bet you didn't know that, huh? Yeah, that's it. Now, that doesn't mean that just because someone wants to have a physical thing, they're afraid of death. Or blah, blah, blah. No, physical things are okay to have and to use, but the ultimate purpose of such use needs to be to create more of one's creator, to become more spiritual. If the purpose is to just become more, we'll say, material, and have more stuff, and to become greater and greater, we'll say, in power or whatever, then that is a destiny that will lead to greater and greater fears, and ultimately fear of death. No matter what else a person believes, you'll lead there. Even if they're greatly religious, supposedly, underneath it, there's this big hole that I know is there, and maybe they'll recognize it. So, okay, so there's an important element of how to become more of a soul itself, is by working on this process of overcoming the fears that the personality, unfortunately, responds to. And you might say, well, why would the soul give us a personality that is so fearful? That doesn't seem to make any sense. Well, the fear in the initial stages of life, especially in a young person, helps that person to stay alive. And without these fears, many of us would succumb to the dangers of especially physical life during the early years of our development. Even though we have parents and teachers, et cetera, that try to help us and keep us alive, without some level of fear, children and adolescents become, unfortunately, dangerous to themselves and maybe to others. And so it's necessary to have this. And even in what we call young adults, it's also necessary. Because we don't have wisdom, we don't have good judgment, we have instead a lot of desires that are very astrally driven, and we tend to move in very separative and selfish ways at these young ages. Well, unfortunately, the fears are necessary because our own selfishness can lead us to facing deadly outcomes, or at least outcomes that may damage us for the rest of our life. Even if we go on living, we may live in ways that are significantly reduced from what we could without having some element of fear. So oddly, the personality is given fear, given the opportunity to become fearful, because it doesn't have the ability to think as well as it needs to. It has to develop itself in thought and become more like its soul so that it can relieve itself of its fear and become a greater being. I hope that makes sense. Unfortunately, a lot of things, metaphysically speaking, are seemingly contradictory until you see the bigger picture and look at, you know, how else could it be, you might say, when you have such a difficult part of the universe to try to grow more of our creator in. Now, to the creator's perspective, it's saying, well, I want challenges, and part of the challenge is makes my existence more meaningful, even though it makes it a little more difficult for human beings and some other types of life forms too, and human beings possibly the most, because we're on this kind of cross of trying to become more aware in worlds where the awareness makes us fearful and it complicates things and more difficult. But at the same time, it helps to contribute so much to the growth of God and to our soul, etc. So it's very difficult for us. It's wonderful also, when we do die for the physical world, to become aware, at least in the astral world, which is the next place where we're going to live a significant amount of time in, that we now have another chance, even though we've lost great opportunity in the physical world, And for most people, a lot of, but not all, of their fear of death is relief because they're continuing to live. And they were thinking, well, gee, I don't know what's going to happen when I die. And now they know. They absolutely know that they're still alive. They're still conscious. They also recognize that they're more giving and more spiritual, more loving, because they have better, we'll call it, sense of the Creator, although they're missing the sense of the lowest dimension of time and space because they're no longer there. So oddly, as we give up some of the lower dimensional aspects of awareness, we become more aware of God, we become more soul-like, but now we can't create as much of God. So it's a kind of a upside-down, contradictory, but nonetheless makes sense system of how to grow the Creator. All right, what else can we do to recognize the soul within us and within others? Well, I'll tell you something that's kind of interesting about souls. Souls tend to do the following. They tend to be amazingly creative in their own right. Most people don't think that if they believe in souls at all, because they think souls are some kind of collective being who are all very angelic and they work together, etc., and therefore they don't really have much individual thought. No, it's not like that at all. Actually, souls are extremely creative and individual, and their creations sometimes don't always work. This is the odd part about it. Everyone also that I talk to, I shouldn't say everyone, many people I talk to, think that souls like have some kind of perfect thought process. Human souls have a perfect thought process, and they don't make mistakes, and they, you know, this is not true. Souls are open to making mistakes because they recognize that being creative means taking some level of, we'll call it, risk that they're going to fail. And failure is not the worst thing in the world, but the worst thing in the world is to not create more of the Creator. And you can't do that if you're not creative. Does that make sense? I hope it does. It seems so self-obvious. It could be any other way, but yeah, souls recognize this. They realize that they have to be more creative by far than humans generally are while they're physically alive. And so they are very creative. They're so creative that they create us. And us, being each human being, each incarnate, is not perfect by any stretch. The soul makes a lot of mistakes even in the creation of us. And here's an interesting part. The soul individually, and we'll call it somewhat separate, creates us and then goes and checks this out with hundreds, if not thousands, of other souls who are going to be co-creating human beings around the same time and space that we're going to be living in, right now, here. Our friends, our family, etc. They all work together, but they have individual, very creative thought, and some of their thoughts are wrong. Because, unfortunately, the more creative one is, the more chance is that they will make a mistake. Now, now that I've bridged that concept, all right, then what does that mean? That we're all a bunch of mistakes down here that our souls help to create? No. It means this, that the best that the soul can do is to try to create as much as possible while at the same time trying to do it with good judgment, with good reasoning, and trying to work with all the other souls that are involved in the process, because we're here collectively as a group. We're not here individually, but we're still individuals. So it does the best it can, but it doesn't do a perfect job by any stretch of the imagination. So some of us are screwed up right from the beginning. We're not screwed up because we're just terrible people, and there is a problem in this whole mess in that the soul has to deal with something called karma. All of our prior lifetimes, we have done things that are wrong. Collectively, the soul has to try to balance that out and correct it. And in that very difficult process, it makes mistakes, and we are free, independent agents. So no matter how good it does, but it never does anything near perfection, its mistakes are now compounded by the fact that it has helped to create a being who is free to think and create on its own. That's us. And although it allows for some of the things that we might do in a goofy fashion. It can't allow for all the things because we're free and creative ourselves, and it doesn't know how it's all going to turn out. It really doesn't. Just like God doesn't know how everything's going to turn out. If it did, how boring would that be? It would make no sense to create a universe where everything was predetermined, because then why go through the motions? So you can see the same thing is being replicated by our souls and ourselves as God chose to do with all of existence, all life. This is a wonderful part of the situation. Our souls are just caught in it as we are and as God chose it to be, because it's the only way for there to be true growth. There has to be freedom of thought. There has to be freedom of action. And each being that is a creator is also being affected by what it creates. You see, we are affecting our soul, and our soul is affecting a greater being, and that's eventually affecting God. Everything is affecting something else. So this is the interesting part about this, is that we are not perfect, our souls are not perfect. And we, even at the end of our journey, where we rejoin our soul after each lifetime and help to raise the consciousness of our soul through our journey of going back through time and space to the state of being our own soul. That's what the end product is. All that we create in virtue, all that we create in goodness, remains with us as we rejoin our soul. And it's like waking up and just realizing you were always been this greater being. And as you do, you remember all the great things you've done, but you only can see the holes. You don't have direct memory of the negative things. A lot of people say, well, why can't I remember my last lifetime if I was really born before? Because most people didn't create at least 60% of goodness throughout that lifetime, which is a requirement in order to have memory. Gotta have about 60% of the pieces to go have memory. And so we don't have the memory, because we weren't 60% of the time creating and functioning as our soul might have while we were in that lifetime. Some people get close to that or even exceed that. When they do, they can remember their last lifetimes. Children are better at it as far as right towards the end of their last lifetime. They can remember parts of it during their first few years as being born, reborn again. But that's due to the proximity issue more than the virtue issue. Although children are more pure, in a sense, than adults are. At any rate, becoming and understanding our soul is a critical element to our existence here. There's a lot more I could have said tonight. Unfortunately, I'm running out of time. Oh, no, not again. Yeah, I'm running out of time for tonight. We'll have another show on this some other time. And I just wanted to mention to you, if you have the chance this Sunday, listening to 1170 AM anywhere on the eastern coast of the United States. And if you can't listen in there, then go to WDISAM.com. And I'm going to be talking about sexual tantric yoga at 4 to 5 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. That's 1 to 2 p.m. Pacific Time. And you can figure out the rest from that. Also, Mimi, one of the people that I am part of a spiritual group with, is going to be talking about the lost continent of Atlantis on July 7th over at Glendale Borders Books and Music, 7 p.m. till 8:15 p.m., so come and visit her there. Well, we're running out of time for tonight's show, so I just want to remind you that we are the connection from this existence back to our soul. Without us, our soul would not be able to create, co-create with its creator in these lower realms that we as human beings are living through. We are like the pilgrim on a great journey of great importance, maybe greater importance than the soul itself. Because how could God grow here if the soul couldn't be here? And we are the way, the method. We are the way and the method to do that. So hopefully that has been helpful for tonight's show. And until next week, this has been Niles McLauer, yeah, I got that my name out there, for Why Life Is.